In our first reading today, Walt shared the words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a prophet of our time. Our second reading comes from the book of Amos, a prophet of the Hebrew Scriptures, chapter 5, verses 18 through 24. Alas for you who desire the day of the Lord. Why do you want the day of the Lord? It is darkness, not light, as if someone fled from a lion and was met by a bear, or went into the house and rested hand against the wall and was bitten by a snake. Is not the day of the Lord darkness, not light, and gloom with no brightness in it? And then God speaks. I hate, I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them, and the offerings of well-being of your fatted animals I will not look upon. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps. But let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. We celebrate the written word of Scripture. Thanks be to God. We celebrate the living word, Christ among us. Please pray with me. Holy God, quiet our hearts that we might hear and absorb your word, and then become your word, alive in the world, so that justice might roll down like a mighty stream. Amen. Amos is a prophet Dr. King loved to quote. Verse 24 that I just read might sound familiar, but let justice roll down like the waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream, or in other translations, like a mighty stream. You'll see it on your bulletin cover. That's a photo of the Civil Rights Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama, Dr. King quoting Amos. He quoted Amos in the letter from Birmingham Jail also. We hear these words and they inspire justice and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. It sounds like one of those refreshing water in the desert scriptures. But we only have to read just a little context. Just those six verses in Amos that I read that go right before that one. And we start to hear its prophetic edge. I hate your festivals and your solemn assemblies and your burnt offerings, but let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. Biblical scholar Walter Brueggemann says that there are basically two parts to the prophetic task. First, the prophet critiques the dominant consciousness and announces that God is dismantling and destroying every unjust structure, every system of oppression. And then second, the prophet energizes the imagination and announces the new, good, just thing that God is building or planting or growing in its place. A tearing down and a dismantling, and only then can there be a building up. Brueggemann calls this the prophetic imagination. The prophetic writings collected in the book of Amos live almost entirely in that first task, in the dismantling and the tearing down. Other prophets will tell you the new thing God is doing. Go read Isaiah. Behold, I'm doing a new thing. It springs up before you. But Amos, no, not Amos. Amos is confronting systems of oppression and injustice so massive that Amos's writings are devoted almost entirely to announcing the dismantling and the destruction of the systems. Again and again, Amos denounces the systems of oppression. You sell people for silver. You trample on the heads of the poor. You deny justice to the oppressed. systems and structures, economic and legal, that oppress and destroy everywhere and all around. And Amos says over and over, God is coming. God is on the way to dismantle all that. I will destroy your strongholds, your altars, your mansions, your houses, houses you will never live in, vineyards from which you will never drink the wine. So when Amos then says, but let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream, this is no refreshing stream. This is a flash flood. This is a wall of water that will wipe out everything in its path, and specifically the oppressive systems and structures that do so much harm. So no wonder that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., standing in the midst of the civil rights movement in the 1960s, confronted the many pervasive systems of oppression that white supremacy had built, and he proclaimed the words of Amos, "Let justice roll down like the waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." Bring it. So today, as we stand in this Amos text, and also honor and give thanks for Dr. King's living legacy, I want us to look at one aspect of the systems of American racism that Dr. King denounced, particularly the impact of U.S. constitutional law and the systems that it helped create. Let's look at that system today. Name our responsibility within it and think of the epiphany tools that we've been talking about the past 2 weeks, and using them, let's find for us something to do. So why constitutional law? Well, some of you know that I'm also a constitutional lawyer. So it's the system that I know best. I love the promises of the United States Constitution. The promise of equal protection under the law, freedom of speech and religion and protest, the right to vote, the notion of a democracy, a government by the people. But in too many ways, we have fallen short of those promises, particularly with regard to the promise of equal protection under the law. With regard to that promise, as Justice Thurgood Marshall said, the Constitution was defective from the very start. You see, the promise of equal protection wasn't included anywhere in the Constitution as originally written. Did you know that? In fact, the Constitution, as it was originally written, explicitly and consciously chose unequal protection of the law. Our founders, the framers of the Constitution, intentionally wrote the Constitution to protect the institution of slavery. The Constitution counted those held in slavery as only 3/5 a person, not giving them any rights, but then letting the slaveholding states count them in the census so that slave states could have greater power. And even as the Constitution granted the privileges and immunities of citizenship in this new country, in that same section, the Constitution required the return of those human beings who had escaped slavery. Privileges and immunities for those we would come to call white, and particularly white men, and slavery and return to slavery for those of African descent. They even used the word privilege. Privilege is written right into the Constitution. The Constitution was written not for equal protection of the laws, but to protect the institution of slavery, and we know that it took almost a century and a civil war until equal protection was finally written into the Constitution in 3 amendments following that civil war. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments ended slavery, recognized the citizenship of those who had been held in slavery, promised equal protection under the law, and guaranteed the right to vote. Those are powerful promises. But we know what happened next. As African Americans had their citizenship recognized, as they began to live free, there was backlash. The brief hope of Reconstruction was replaced by Jim Crow laws. Southern states couldn't stand that Black Americans could now vote, so they began to pass voting restrictions, just like those efforts to restrict voting across the country that we still see today. And also in the South, official segregation laws were passed, notwithstanding the now constitutional promise of equal protection of law. In the North, and in places like California, more subtle and insidious laws allowed homeowners to prevent the sale of homes to African Americans and banks to refuse to finance mortgages for African Americans in what were predominantly white areas. Those laws created segregated housing patterns like we see here in Marin County and in the Bay Area. They are why Black Americans who worked in the wartime shipbuilding industry in Marin City couldn't buy homes or use their GI Bill benefits in other parts of this county. Those segregated housing patterns then contributed to unequal and inequitable funding for public schools. The systems that those laws created, segregated housing patterns and inequity in public education, remain today. According to July 2019 census estimates, San Anselmo is nearly 90% white and 0.9% African American. As recently as this past July, here in Marin County, the Sausalito Marin City School District had to enter into a desegregation order, a 2019 desegregation order, after findings of racial segregation in the public schools. Specifically, findings that that school system had knowingly and intentionally maintained separate programs for separate communities. We know that even after the equal protection was first promised in the Constitution in the 1860s, it took almost another 100 years and a mass movement of millions of people to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And even then, after passage of that civil rights legislation, progress was again met with what legal scholar Michelle Alexander has detailed and named the new Jim Crow. She describes in her book of the same name a new system of racialized social control through the mass incarceration of African Americans. Housing patterns, access to adequately funded public education, the promised right to vote, the protection that is supposed to be provided by public policing, the freedom to move, the risk of being arrested and incarcerated, economic opportunity, the promised equal protection of the law. So many of the systems and structures in which we live and move and have our being, those systems are the product and continued embodiment of the centuries-long history of American racism. They are systems that have come into being through the specific intention to benefit some, to benefit white people, and to exclude and to harm African Americans and, more broadly, all people of color and indigenous people. For white folks, as we live and move through these systems and structures, we continue to benefit, whether we intend it or not. For example, I attended a public school system in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, Maryland, that was not equally funded. Predominantly white schools were funded better than predominantly Black schools, like so many public school systems across the United States. And again, this was related to and compounded by discriminatory housing practices. So our school district was under a school desegregation order. I carry that benefit with me, whether I intend it or not, every day of my life. that unequal access to public education that I had that has served as the foundation for everything that has come since. For those of us who are white in the room, for my life and for yours, these systems and structures have provided unequal protection of the law, unequal benefit for us, and unequal harm for others, whether we intend it or not. And here we are, all a part of it. And Amos and Dr. King say, "Let justice roll down like the waters, and righteousness like a mighty stream." That can feel overwhelming. If we're part of all this, intended or not, what can we ever do? And we can feel that, and we can name that, that sense of overwhelm. But we don't get to stay there for long, because people are being harmed, and we are benefiting, and we have work to do. So remember, we're in this season of epiphany. We're thinking about how we experience things bigger than us, how we experience God's presence manifest in the midst of us and find there our work to do. Here, we experience unjust systems bigger and stronger than any of us that trace their origins back to before the writing of the United States Constitution. In listening to the words of Amos, we experience God's clear and steely determination that unjust systems and structures will be dismantled so that all God's children can live free. So I want us to take these tools of epiphany that we've been talking about for the past few weeks and to find our something to do. Looking for light for the next step, and acknowledging our 200-year present, the community of work over time. So let's use that 200-year present first. We talked about that last week, and here's a brief refresher. Last week, we talked about Elise Boulding's concept of the 200-year present first. Think of the oldest person who would have held you when you were an infant. And then think back to the date of their birth. Then think of the youngest person you might hold now and project for them a robust lifespan. What decade might they reach? Our lives are held and touch lives that span those 200 years. So think of that and hold that, and we'll put that right over here and come back to it. Two summers ago, the Board of More Light Presbyterians participated in an anti-racism training facilitated by Jessica Vasquez Torres. I've quoted Jessica here before. I believe she is a prophet of our day. Over the course of the training, she asked us collaboratively to write a timeline of the history of racism in the U.S. around the wall of the room. From 1620, when Africans were first kidnapped and brought here into slavery, all the way until now. And the task was actually to detail all types of racism for all people of color, Asian Americans, Latinx, for indigenous people, but I'm going to focus today on the experience of African Americans. Then she asked us to do the same for the history of the resistance to all that. So I want us to use our prophetic imagination to envision that here, around this room. From 1620, when Africans were first brought to the United States, or the colonies at that point, in slavery, to the expansion of slavery, to the Constitution's protection of slavery, to the Fugitive Slave Act, and the Civil War, and then Jim Crow, and the violence of lynchings, and segregation, and redlining that kept black families moving into white neighborhoods, unchecked discrimination in employment and in everything else, mass incarceration, the state-sanctioned killing of Michael Brown, Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Freddie Gray, and so many more. Now, envision the timeline of resistance. From the first person who escaped slavery, through slave rebellions, the Underground Railroad, Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, the abolition movement, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, W.E.B. Du Bois, the NAACP, their work to end segregation, Thurgood Marshall, Brown v. Board, the Civil Rights Movement, the SCLC, SNCC, the Black Panthers, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Black Lives Matter. Now, with those two timelines in mind, the history of racism and the history of resistance, I invite you to take your 200-year present and put it up there too. The 200 years of lives that your life will hold and touch. I was talking about that 200-year present. I was talking it over with one of my good friends as we were having coffee, and I shared that my great-grandmother was born in 1891, so my 200-year present would start probably right about there. And my friend thought for a moment and said, my great-grandmother was born into slavery. How has your life touched these timelines? For white folks in the room, how have you benefited? For persons of color, how have you experienced harm? For all of us, how have you helped resist all the way up until now? But don't stop there, because remember, your life will touch so many more years of lives. What do you want that to look like? How can we make that look more like the timeline of resistance than the timeline of white supremacy that has brought us to this place? How will we join in God's work of dismantling all that white supremacy has built, connected with everything that has gone before? And so, remember our tools. What is light for the next step? And I have 5 concrete suggestions. First, let's say some true things. Before we do anything else, we have to acknowledge the truth of how American racism has been at work in the country from the very beginning, and how it is still at work now, all the time, everywhere, particularly in systems and structures, and how we benefit. We name that, and we confess that so that by the grace of God, we can then do something about it. Then second, let's learn more. Let's do our work, as they say in the movement. Follow your curiosity. Remember that? Is there something today, in all these words that I have said, that has raised a question for you, made you wonder, given you a knot in your stomach? Follow that. Find out more, and not just about the history that we've talked about here, but about what's going on in you. What are the obstacles that are keeping you from engaging in all of this? Next month on February 8th at 3 p.m., Church and Society will be co-hosting an event with Serge Marin. Serge stands for Showing Up for Racial Justice on Voter Suppression. During Lent, we'll be having a 6-week Sunday seminar series on anti-racism and reparations work. You can come to those, but you don't need to wait until then. You can get started now. Follow your curiosity. Let's do our work. Then third, let's listen to non-white communities, to their goals and their objectives, This sunk in with me in another workshop that Jessica Vasquez Torres convened this past October, and I think I talked a little bit about it on my first Sunday here. As we move into this work, it's important that we white people just don't recenter ourselves all over again because we're the ones who got it wrong in the first place. It's important, we need to do the work, but we need to do it by centering on the needs of the communities that are harmed by racism and listening to what they're saying about their harm, following their leadership, and doing our work in accountability to them. Fourth, show up. That February voter suppression event we're hosting with Showing Up for Racial Justice. Showing up means putting our bodies, our whole selves, alongside black and brown bodies in places where folk are most needed to stand against racism, even when it means standing in places of discomfort and risk. And then fifth, we can join the ongoing work of dismantling and move into the work of reparation. As we engage the work of dismantling, we need to learn more about and enter into the work of repair. That's what reparation means, of healing, helping to heal the harm that has been done to communities and individuals that continues into this day. And we need to grow in ourselves an openness to sharing the resources that it will take to do that. Wow, I know that's a lot. So before I sit down, I just want to make sure that I have said this. This is good news. Good news in the name of Jesus Christ. God requires nothing less than the dismantling of every system and structure that American racism and white supremacy have built in this nation, and then rebuilding a just world with the repair and healing of all the lives that have been harmed. That is good news, of course, to those whom the systems actively oppress, and it is good news for us all because we all lose so much when we live in a world where all people can't live free. The world is harmed whenever any child is prevented from becoming all that God has created them to be. That's the bottom line. That's what matters. And that's why the words of Amos and Dr. King ring true today. Hope for the day when their prayer will be our prayer too, and the whole world's yes. Let justice roll down like the waters. Righteousness, like a mighty stream. Friends, may it be so in you and in me and in the lives we live, so that all people may live free.